on WPFW 89.3 FM. That's the Labor Heritage Power Hour.
Thursdays from 1 to 2 p.m.
The heart and soul
of the American labor movement.
I'm Kamaya.
I'm Amira.
I'm Kaya.
I'm Kamaya.
And you're listening to WPFW Washington.
Another man done gone. Another man done gone from the county farm. Another man done gone.
Huh? I don't know. What? I'm just going across the street.
Shut your mouth.
Oh, no. What'd I do?
Turn around. Put your hands behind your back. Let's go.
Oh,
the jury of your peers having found you guilty. 10 years.
What? Come on. Get that set.
I was in jail, too, man. It's cold-blooded in the jail. You go down there looking for justice. That's what you find. Just us.
Welcome to another edition of Crossroads Today. Now here's your host, Roach Brown.
Good morning. And thank you for staying on air to listen to our second hour. The first Tuesday of each month, Crossroads is a two-hour show. And it's heard all around the world on WPFW 89.3 FM on your FM dial. We did on the first Tuesday of each month, we do a 2-hour special. Every first Tuesday, we come to you live from the world famous Ben's Chili Bowl. But this morning, Martine and I are in LA, and we just had an interview with a young man named James Anderson, who's on death row and been there for 44 years. And we were talking to him about his situation and what's going on. The second hour, we have another gentleman who did 39 years and was exonerated because he was innocent. In the Innocent Project and a couple of other organizations that who work on exoneration, I mean, getting people released who are innocent, 50% of everybody who is exonerated are Black. I wonder why. It means that they were erroneously convicted or didn't have all the proper pieces lined up in place to put this person in prison. So exonerations, the majority of folk who are all exonerated, like the one historical famous case, is the Central Park Five in New York City, who were accused of a gruesome crime. And former President Trump took an article out in the New York Times and asked and requested that these gentlemen get the death penalty. Years later, it was proved that they were exonerated. They were innocent. They were wrongly convicted and sentenced in jail, the Central Park Five. So this has happened tremendously, oftentimes to folk, people of color. And we just try to keep these stories in front so you understand what's happening in the criminal injustice system. Our next guest this morning is a man named Walter Lomax from Baltimore, Maryland. This is a national, international show, Baltimore. We're in LA. We just got finished interviewing a guy in California, somebody calling from Texas. So Crossroads is touching folk all over the globe in terms of criminal justice issues. Walter Lomax is a friend of ours that we've met 20 years ago. And he has been like you, Nikisha. He's been a go-getter. He's been on the ground making things happen, getting laws passed, bills passed. Every time we turn around, he's in the House of Legislature in Maryland, in Annapolis, working on various aspects of the bill. And he got a bill passed called the Walter Lomax bill after he was exonerated and released for being innocently convicted. So we're waiting on Walter to join us. But in the meantime, Nikisha and Merrick, we just talked to Lois Wolf, who was one of our guests in the previous hour with James Anderson. And Lois has been a friend of the gentleman, James Anderson, on death row for the last 20, 25 years. And he's been asking us to look at James' case. And for the last 4 or 5 years, we finally got around to it. And I wish we'd have done it sooner. Lois Wolf, are you still there with us on?
I'm on. Thank you. Yes, I'm on.
Thank you. While we're waiting for Walter Lomax to come on, we don't know what the technical problems are, but we got Lois. You've been working on James Anderson's case on death row for how many years, Lois?
Since about 2 years after he was convicted, wrongly convicted of two murders.
So you said 30 years?
More like, I guess I can't do the math, but yes, since 1981, yes.
Okay, over 30 years.
How did you come to know him?
I got a phone call once, a collect call, from Co-Production Magazine, and I'm so grateful that I answered that call because and accepted the call. And it was James, and he started talking about his case. And at first, I was, confused, but I started the case after getting to know him, and then I visited him at San Quentin from here in Washington at least seven times. And over those years, I've gotten to know him very, very closely. Every time I met with him, we embraced at the visiting center in San Quentin, which is no nice place either. I mean, it wasn't in his cell, but it was in the visiting area with bars all around and barbed wire. And every time I spoke with him in person or on the phone, he calls me at least several times a week. He's always inspiring me. He's always so clear. He has never lost his focus. He's never lost his will to survive. And he's kept his sanity through all these years. Imagine, in a place like San Quentin, which is, as he calls it, a hellhole. Well, now he's been transferred very suddenly about 7 weeks ago to a place called the California Men's Colony, which is a very, very bizarre place and name. So I continue to support him as I always will.
Let me ask you this. Are you an attorney? How did you get in?
I'm not an attorney. I'm a journalist.
You're a journalist, and you work with
Co-Production Magazine for the last 45 years, yes.
Well, so you've been a writer for a journalist for the past 45 years. Is this the first and only case of a death row inmate that you've been working with?
I know of other cases, but he is the first person I work directly with, yes.
Have you attended any executions while you were over in California?
No.
No. Wow. Okay. Have you met any his family, his kids, friends, etc.?
Say it again, please.
Have you met any of James's Anderson's family, friends, and associates while you've been working with him for the past 30 years?
Well, he mentioned Sheila O'Donnell. She worked very hard on this case. She died now, but she was a dear friend and an investigative journalist herself.
We'd like to hear from our listeners. The phone number to call is 202-588-0893. 202-588-0893. I'd like to hear what your take is on the death penalty. Do you think it's a deterrent? What should be happening is the governor in California issued a moratorium on the death penalty, which means that it took everybody off, so they stopped the execution. But that does not mean that they have not removed the death sentence off of their case, off their record. So they're still on the death sentence, but even though they don't have a date to be executed. So folks who listen to the first hour, if you have any questions or comments for the Nkechi murder hour, you can call in, because this is a topic, as I said before. I was on death row myself about 90 days, and I was on it illegally. I had a life sentence, or I was waiting to be sentenced to a life with a death penalty in 64. And because of my attitude and negativity, I was just being a jerk. I was doing everything, spitting, throwing stuff on folk, and I was just trying to make it unbearable for the guards, because I was not going to stay in that cell quiet and peaceful while they talking about killing me. So anything and everything I could do, I flooded the toilets, flooded the commode, ripped up the mattress, anything. I became a nuisance. So one of the guards decided he's going to move me on death row and said he hoped that I get it, and he's going to give me a taste of it before the judge make the determination, and the judge didn't. So for 90 days, I was on death row, and I wanted to commit suicide. I wasn't going to stay in that cell and let somebody come and kill me. James, we talked to Anderson, the gentleman was on the previous hour, about the men and women who've committed suicide while on death row waiting to be executed. And that is a terrible, terrible feeling. So if anybody's listening, you want to call in with a question or comment about this situation, because believe this, one out of every three people
or black people have somebody in prison, a loved one, wife, husband, sister, daughter, grandmother, whatever. So corrections in prison impact or touches at least 60 to 70% of our population. We got a call on the line right now. We'll take our first caller. Come on, you're on the air, please. Question or comment?
This is Rick calling you long distance from Germany, man.
Boy, you are my favorite caller. I knew you'd be on the line, Rick. Thank you, partner.
How many death row or lifers have been exonerated in the last 20 years?
I don't know. I know in the last 20 years, or last 15 years, it's been 50%. I think it's been over 300 and some people have been exonerated through the Innocent Project. I could be wrong with that number, but let's put it this way. It's been over 100 or 200 people have been exonerated through the work and efforts of the Innocent Project. But I don't know how many nationally, federally, and locally. That's a number beyond that we haven't gotten to yet.
Roach,
yes?
That doesn't count those who were executed.
Say that again?
Those who were executed were not exonerated. They killed them. They can,
yes.
They can come back and show their face anymore. They're gone.
Yes, I know. That's something sad about this death penalty, because there's cases. Somebody made a request on our show about a year or so ago that for all those folks have been executed when DNA could have exonerated them or cleared them, they wanted to go back and exhume the bodies to see and match up the DNA, and it's been tremendous pushback not to do that. They didn't want to find out how many wrongfully executed people that have been put to death due to whatever mismanagement or misjudgment.
So, Rose, could I mention something else? There was a Supreme Court, oddly enough, a Supreme Court ruling. I think it was unanimous, believe it or not, that about a year and a half ago, that stated that death row prisoners can have access to DNA evidence that would prove their innocence. It's an amazing ruling.
The Supreme Court ruled, but some state legislators are refusing, former prosecutors are refusing to follow that order.
That's right. Yes.
I mean, how is that possible? The Supreme Court ruled that
death
row inmates are entitled to DNA examination. And some states can overrule what the Supreme Court state and said, we're not going to do it. And the guy's dead, leaving dead, and we ain't going to dig up what's already didn't happen.
Well, it was an historic ruling in the sense that it was a unanimous ruling. I mean, who would have thought in this Supreme Court? But it sort of has been, you know, washed away by, you know, it's. But I've talked.
What was the name of that case? What was the name of that case? Do you know?
I could check that. I don't know the name of the case. I can look that up and I'll let you know.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
So you've been dealing with this case, and is this the only death penalty case that you've been involved with, Lewis Wolf?
Yes. Yes.
So maybe it might be good. If you could just take a few minutes and talk to us about Covert Action and its relation, your relation to the work you do with Covert Action Weekly Bulletin, and your interest in like case like this death penalty case.
Over the years, we're now in our 45th year. Over the years, we've written a lot about the death penalty, about wrongful convictions, and about cases very much like James. And of course, we've written a lot about Mumia and other cases. And the fact is that, as James said repeatedly today, it's the injustice system. It's not a justice system. And how many cases does it take of innocent people to be executed or to spend, as James says, 44 years in prison? He always referred to San Quentin when I was visiting with him there as a hellhole. And it was that. It's one of the oldest prisons in this country. It's full of rats and roaches and the rest. And, you know, he has kept his sanity all these years. I mean, he's just an amazing human being that he has been able to do that.
It takes a lot of strength, man.
Yeah, it really does.
It takes a lot of strength.
You heard his voice today. He was so coherent I mean, he covered the issue in the 30 minutes that we had together with him today so completely, you know, and there's so much more to his case that he couldn't say yet. But and if you want, I can give, I'm sure he would like to receive letters from listeners. And if you want, I can give his postal address.
Give it out. Give it the information now of how people can communicate with him.
Okay. It's James P. Anderson. His C number, his prison number, is C11400. That's 11,400. Letter C, hyphen 11400. His address there is at the California Men's Colony. And then the next line would be 8101. And then the C number, C11400, then CMC hyphen East hyphen FAC, F as in Francis, AC, dot A, letter A, hyphen 2116, San Luis, S-A-N-L-U-I-S, Obispo, O-B-I-S-P-O, California, 93409. And address it to James P. Anderson at that address.
Okay. So if you wanted to communicate with James Anderson, he gave you the information how to do it. I wanted to get into some of the things, his artwork. In fact, you can write to him, but he's a writer. He's an artist. He's created some beautiful art. Some is on exhibit in the San Francisco State Museum, the San Francisco Museum over there. He does a thing with dominoes. One of his passions is how he creatively changed dominoes, the face of dominoes, the people use them as chains, necklaces, braces, etc. So he's been extremely involved doing all kinds of things.
And also the T-shirt that he mentioned today, which he designed with the names of hundreds of people who've been executed by police in this country.
Do you have the shirts, Lewis?
I have some, yes. I still have in different sizes. And if people can get in touch with me, if you want, I'll give my phone number, 202-841-4350.
Okay. And if folks listening, this is Crossroads, and we're coming to you live from L.A., Martine and I. Our first hour, we had a gentleman on called James Anderson, who's currently on death row. And we've been talking to him and trying to see what can be done to help or assist in this particular case. But as you said, Lewis, he's very articulate and intelligent. And I can tell he's been a master or wizard in that law library, because he used some phrases and terms that most folk who are not familiar with law will understand. So he's knowledgeable about his case. You don't have no choice. If you're sitting in a cell all day long waiting to die, all you can do is read and study and see what you can do to find a way. You get out of this situation.
He spends a lot of his time in the library there, every time that he can get permission to go there. Yes, he does.
You know, one of the things we got is, they always say when somebody's executed, they ask what his last wish is for the meal. I haven't heard nobody ask for to be alone with their wife or their girlfriend. That hasn't been granted, but I know two guys on death row asked that their last request was to spend some time with their wife or girlfriend, and they've been denied. And it seems as though to somebody who's facing death, whatever they ask for, they should be able to get it.
James and I joke a lot about, he's in touch with several people who correspond with him, and we joke about it, and I said, James, you want to marry her? Yes, I want to marry her.
Wow. Did you know of any of the guys who committed suicide over there while you were visiting James, and did you meet any other death row inmates who have been executed or committed suicide?
I have not, no, but he spoke today about several people that he knew who did commit suicide there.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And by the way, these suicides in many cases are actual suicides. But in some cases, I'm sure we all read about it in the news, of people who are found hanging in their cell. Those are suicides done by the prison. You know, it's not not easy to commit suicide, I can only say, but many of those cases are not really suicides. And James, he knew several people, as he said today, who did commit suicide, yes.
You know, there's another form of suicide that's going around. We call it prison side. For those men and women who did decades, 30, 40, 50 years in prison, and they come out into the street, and they can't adjust. There's so many changes. I've been out over 25, 30 years, and I still have problems adjusting. So for somebody that did 30, 40, 50 years, so you got men, and one of the prime examples is the movie Shawshank Redemption, where the librarian, Woody, and that's happening now. So there's homicide, fratricide, genocide. There's a new one called prison side, not the men on death row. We're talking about folk who are in the street, been released, trying to acclimate or adjust back to society, and they just can't take it. And they go back to prison. They do something and send them back to prison. So we're calling that
prison.
You
remember the film One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest?
Yes, yes.
That was another similar one, yes. Yeah.
And in fact, that seemed like it could have been our story, because everything that was in the One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest we experienced. Obviously, I spent 3 years in the insane asylum over in John Howe Pavilion in Washington, D.C. And I'm telling you, that movie, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, was very accurate, on the point, and it brought back some painful memories. So we got guys out there now going through some of that. So even if James Anderson is released, like the men in Washington, New York City, that Central Park Five, they did. It takes years to acclimate, to adjust, to feel like you belong in society, come back. And this, he's going to need a tremendous amount of support and transition. And I'm glad that James Anderson has somebody like you in his corner, Lewis, because I'm telling you, if you don't come, when you come out of prison, if you don't have what we call it, a cut buddy or best buddy or walk buddy, somebody that's going to walk you through, you are frustrated, you get very depressed, and you want to go return to something that you know.
Well, he mentioned today others who were supporting him. Bruce Gagnon is one, and Katie Herr. So I'm not the only one. But I will say, if I'm not mistaken, Roach, like James, you were innocent. You were not...
I was guilty, Lewis. I was guilty.
Okay. Well,
and I ain't gonna lie, I was guilty. If I did it, I did it. If it didn't, I didn't. You know what I mean? And I paid the price for it. But
you didn't deserve to be on death row or in St. Elizabeth's and all that.
I didn't deserve to be in jail the way I looked at it. You know what I mean? They should have just let me go. But you know, that's what it was. And my thing came out just right after doing segregation. Huh? I didn't hear you.
Who pardoned you?
I always tell about
Abraham Lincoln.
Abraham Lincoln, pardon me. No, it was a commutation from President Gerald Ford on Christmas Day in 1975. And every day since then has been, we met the young lady who was instrumental in helping me get my executive clemency and pardon. She used to work as Betty Ford's press secretary. And would you believe... that's been 45 years ago, and I never had an opportunity to tell this lady, thank you. So we met 30 days ago. She was Betty Ford's press secretary, and I met her when I worked at Channel 5 with Moy Povich up in WTTG. I was coming out of Lorton on the furlough, a pass, and I had a job at the television station, and one of my supervisors was this young lady named Sheila Weidenfeld, who was Betty Ford's press secretary, and she was very instrumental in getting me my executive clemency. And I never had the chance to tell her thank you. So it's been 45 years, and we reconnected 3 weeks ago, 30 days ago.
How did you meet up with her? To unsung hero.
No, Ramon Bain, who was Marion Barry's press secretary, who was a press secretary for Coral Masters Barry, Marion's wife, was at a luncheon, and my name came up in the conversation. The lady said she read the Washington Post, the food section, and she never reads the food section. There was an article about Ben's Chili Bowl. And in the article, they referred to Martine and I doing our radio show from the Chili Bowl. And the lady said, I know Roach. And the lady across the table, Ramon, said, well, I can get in touch with her. She said, can you? And they called. And when Ramon called me, she said, I got a lady want to talk to you. And I said, what's her name? She didn't want to give me a name. I said, look, I don't want to play no games. I ain't got time for that. There may be somebody I don't want to talk to. And the lady got on the phone and said, this is Sheila. and I froze. I cried.
Oh,
lady, I've been waiting 45 years to tell you, thank you for saving my life. And we met, had lunch, a three-hour lunch, me, my wife, Miss Virginia Ali from the Chili Bowl, and we just fellowshipped and hugged and kissed and cried. It was a, it was something I would never, ever forget. So
did you get some pictures, Votes? Did
you know it? You know it.
So Sheila's working with us on some things, and she is quite a lady. She was the producer of Panorama, for some of y'all who have been around a while. Moy Poets used to work in Washington, D.C. with a sister named Alice Travis. And I worked there during that time on the Paths from Lorton, which is at the same time that I met my wife during 1973. So from 73 on, this lady has been phenomenal. And she calls and we talk every few days or so. And every time I hear a voice, it just, I thank you. When somebody saved your life, like what you're doing now, Lois, and what we're talking about, James Anderson.
Yeah.
When you help work on somebody's case and you get released, that's the kind of freedom and bond or connection that you can't put a hand on. You can't put a price tag on these kind of things.
That's so true, man.
Yeah, when somebody help you and don't expect nothing in return, and that help save your life. Without this lady, I would still be in prison. So Sheila Weidenfeld, I want to thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. And I'll tell it to the hat. I'll tell it to everybody. Merry Christmas.
Merry, merry.
There you go. So, Lois.
Yes.
So, what's your next step with James Allen? What's your next step? What is it that listening audience can do?
Well, this rope is a big issue, this piece of rope, which I didn't know until James mentioned it. There was another length of rope, which was also, which he mentioned today. That's news to me. And I worry about this issue because I'm worried that the piece of rope, which is apparently still in the possession of law enforcement in California, we thought that they had disappeared it, but it seems that there still is there. I'm worrying that they will disappear it, or it'll quote lose it. That could be potentially could be a game changer for James,
yeah.
As he mentioned today, because of the DNA. You asked me, Roach, yesterday on the phone whether DNA stays, whether it holds or does it just disappear or fade away or what, I don't know.
So you're saying that rope, after 44 years, that rope still has DNA, evidence that could be probably culpable to let him out or help him in his release.
And James's DNA is not going to be found on that rope. No way.
Have the rope been tested for anybody's DNA?
It's Fred Anders, who he mentioned today, who's the killer.
So his DNA was found on the rope?
According to what James said, yes.
Well, can he take that to the Innocence Project, do you think? If they say they need DNA, well, that's exculpatory DNA, not his, somebody else's, you know?
Yeah.
Well, the what we have to do is to get our hands, our hands on this rope, and put it to a DNA test.
Mm. Where is that? How do we do that?
Say that again.
How do we do it?
They got to get the rope. It's a rope in the evidence.
It's supposed to be an evidence locker. All evidence related to a case is supposed to stay in the possession of the prosecutor in the evidence locker.
Well, I guess we're the last ones to trust the law enforcement, but they may.
So I'm sorry, Roach, I got to run. But Lewis, it was great talking to you. Phenomenal work.
You.
I remember over 40 something years ago, I'm just a young person, and you know, seeing you on panels and the work that you're doing. So, you know, You're still at it. Keep on keeping on, Lou. So
well,
I appreciate
our website, for those who want to read us, it's covertactionmagazine.com. We publish new articles almost every day, new investigative articles with photos, with documents, and everything. on international as well as domestic issues.
And Vota Martin, y'all have a safe trip back to D.C.
Thank you.
Okay, I
got it. Hey, Louis, I want to ask you this question. Do you remember Tookie Smith?
Who's it again?
He was Tookie. A guy named was Tookie Smith. He was executed.
Oh, yes. He was executed. Yes.
He was one of the gang leaders that started the Crips or the Blood. I forgot which one it was.
Yeah.
And he had a tremendous amount of support from celebrities, movie stars, even people out of the country. And they executed Tookie.
Well, you asked me about if I knew of somebody who was executed. I knew Troy Davis, who was executed in Georgia, who was innocent, absolutely innocent of killing a police officer. He didn't own a gun, so how could he have shot this police officer? Yeah. And the last words he said before they killed him was, "You are killing somebody who's innocent." Or better words than that than I can remember.
And did you attend that execution?
Not his execution, but I attended his memorial service in a church there. And I met his sister, Martina. And she said, let me tell you, I'll just quickly tell you the story. Let me tell you what happened. They took took Troy's remains from the prison, loaded him up in a coffin, and drove him from the prison site, which is in Lincoln, Georgia, north of Atlanta, and drove him to Atlanta for an autopsy to determine the cause of his death.
Wow.
Yeah.
And he just executed
him. And then, if that wasn't enough, then they put him back in the casket and drove him, and she said, I'm looking out my front window, and they're walking up the steps with his remains, and they sort of hear. And they said, and then, okay, get ready for this. Then they handed me a piece of paper with a invoice.
For the autopsy.
I mean, Hitler wouldn't have thought of that one.
Man, it's gruesome. I know when I was over in the jail and they was executing people, and I was surprised to find out that the U.S. Marshals came over when somebody received a death sentence. The marshal came over with a paper. You had to sign to agree to be executed. I said, what kind of jiggy boogie is this? You had to sign a paper from that the government is seeking to impose a death penalty if you're convicted of this offense. And you have to sign this, and you had to agree to this particular determination. Oh, hell no. I mean, it's the things you find out that they even charge the families the cost of burying some inmates who've been executed, even though they're poor and they got in and they can't afford it. So you find out a lot of crazy things, but I want to suggest that if you're doing COVID Action Magazine, I like to push this thing for those men who've been executed and women, that where DNA could exculpate or release them or show that they had executed the wrong person, that they can exhume the bodies and go back and match the DNA and see if they executed the right or the wrong person. You said something earlier about the Supreme Court's decision, or was that Nikichi? Hey, man, this stuff has to stop, and we need people like you, Louis, to stay on top of this to make sure that
like you both. Thank you.
What would you suggest that people do for not only for James Anderson, but for to stop other future death penalties? Because last week a guy got executed in Florida, named Joel Carnes. He was executed. What would you suggest that people do?
Well, I think the power of mass demonstrations can always be the way to fight this. You know, mass incarceration, which we know is rampant in this country, and the book was written on mass incarceration, and people have to understand that there are thousands of people who are innocent in prisons across this country. Men and women, both. And they don't have to be executed to prove their innocence, as in the case that we talked about today. So
you know, President Trump
If he gets back in, he's talking about bringing the death penalty back or executing folk, etc.
Don't forget, he ordered that, the execution of how many federal people in federal prisons?
Say that again.
The last month of his presidency, he ordered the execution of, I think it was at least a dozen people in federal prisons. Yeah.
What? He did?
He loves the idea of people being executed, yes.
Oh, wow.
Oh, I'm sure he does. That's his favorite thing to do.
But I don't see Joe Biden or other former presidents standing up against execution, no.
Uh-uh.
They look the other way, too.
They sure do, man. You know what? I'm really disappointed in what's going on in this country, man. I always have been, you know, but this thing about the Supreme Court, when I was locked up and I got my case affirmed, my life sentence was affirmed, the only hope I had was to file my case to the Supreme Court. And the Supreme Court sent back an answer saying they refuse to hear your case. If this is the only, you're drowning, and the only lifeguard that you can see is the Supreme Court, and you're right there, and the lifeguard tell you, he's not going to bring you out of the water or save you. And here the Supreme Court with Clarence Thomas and a couple more of the justices have been questioned about their ethics, their credibility, their veracity, their truthfulness, and yet they make decisions, like James Anderson, that execute somebody, and yet their hands get passed. So most, two, three of the Supreme Court justices at their confirmation hearing said it would not overturn Roe versus Wade. And they get up and overturn it. When they lie in public or in front of Congress, then you got to go to these people to get to seek relief for justice and fairness and equity.
Yeah.
It's a sham, man. The Supreme Court is a sham. They do the same things that we do, and yet they got the power to order an execution or deny or stop this erroneous behavior from happening. And they are just a shady, crooked, untruthful, biased, prejudiced, everybody else. And they got the power. Why we give power to people who break the law to punish people for breaking the law? And they're breaking the law. How is that, man? This don't make sense.
Well, when they execute people in these days, as you know, the Supreme Court has to step in, or has the right.
The power to stay.
Supreme Court,
yes.
The Supreme Court, and you know, it's even if one member of the Supreme Court, one of the progressive women there, they just vote. And it's a stacked deck as it was arranged by Donald Trump, and so even in the last moments of possible justice for somebody on death row about to be executed, the Supreme Court never helps them, never steps
That's
up.
Right. But it seems as though if somebody can be on the Supreme Court, this is that the name implies that you're going to get, if you got an injustice done to you, you go take it to the Supreme Court, that injustice will be rectified. But that's not the case. You know, say they're just as shady as us. When they take money on false pretenses or don't declare everything on their taxes or information, then they're selling their city councilman. Every week we read about somebody getting caught with the hand in a cookie jar. And some of the city chief justices of the court, hands have been caught in the cooking jar. They even gave ambiguous statements and lied in public. Then get on the Supreme Court, and they can affect everybody's life for years. And their
hands
are not clean.
Yeah.
But yet they got the power to make these. That something needs to be done to undo this. This is WPFW 89.3 FM Crossroads, your station for jazz and justice. We come to you every Tuesday, and the first Tuesday we do a 2-hour show. This is the second show. Our guests were not able to make it yet, a medical emergency. So we're just making up the show as we go along. Sometimes these things happen. Our guests are not able to make it for various reasons. So we asked Lewis Wolf to stay on. So if you got any questions or comments to call, please, the phone number is 202-588-0893. 202-588-0893. Also, for those folks who make donations and contributions to our fund drive, we want to thank you, thank you, thank you. And we still need your help. Even though the drive is over, it's never over. We need help. We need money to stay on the air. So if you're in position to make a donation or contribution to WPFWK of Crossroads. We appreciate it, so we can bring you to it. Because this, the show we had this morning, the previous hour, we had a live interview with a gentleman from Death Row who's been on it for 44 years, James Anderson. We will be called, getting him back on air to talk about other situations, but to be on Death Row for 44 years, waiting to die, and he's been there, that is a folk, that is some pressure and pain that you can never imagine unless you're in that particular situation. So we wish this guy a lot of luck. And on the phone and is Lewis Wolf, who has been working on James Anderson's case for the past 20, 30 years. You some kind of friend, man, to stick with somebody this long. How does your family, are you married, Lewis?
My wife has passed. No,
oh, I'm sorry to hear that, man.
Yeah.
How does she feel about your work,
James?
On
this? Dolores, huh? Dolores met James, and we sat together in California. So yes.
Well, your wife met him.
I met James, as I said, seven times when I went out there to visit him there.
Was your wife with you?
Yes, she met him too. Yes.
Okay.
And my daughter, who was 11 years old at the time, we visited San Quentin. Imagine taking a teenage daughter to the prison, which was scary for her. She still talks about it, yes.
How old is she now?
39.
Wow.
And I'm a grandfather.
That busy going, huh? I'm a
grandfather, too, yes. Yeah.
Oh, wonderful.
I can't tell you what a privilege it is to know James. Not only because he's innocent, but because he just keeps his sanity through all these years. As he said today on the call, you know, a lot of people just lose it because of the conditions in prisons.
Yeah. I've seen a few people commit suicide, and I was on death row for about 9 days, and I wanted to commit suicide, and I was nowhere near on as long as James. I know the hopelessness and the despair that you go through, waiting on somebody to come to pick you out of that cell to kill you. You can't run, you can't hide, you can't call nobody, ain't nobody there. And when they come, you got to go. That's a terrible feeling. Mentally, you are dead. It kills you mentally, inside. You got to be extremely strong, like James, man. They'll take it. What about, have you tried for a pardon? Have y'all filed for a petition for pardon from the governor, Newsom?
That's one of the things James mentioned today. He's trying to get a lawyer who really will fight for his case and do it pro bono, because he doesn't have money. And so that's a strong possibility. But Gavin Newsom used to support the death penalty, and then he somehow flipped. I don't know what brought him to that. To that understanding about the injustice of
just politicians, man, they flip and flop. Yeah. You know what I mean? They got to make a deal here and make a deal there. You know, and somebody's life is hanging in the balance. I want to appreciate and say thank you, man. But I never met a guy stayed in somebody's case for 30 years. I know families or folks who meet somebody in prison and they get involved in their particular case and it lasts for a few years. But you've been doing this over 20 years, man. What are you getting out of this?
I love this man. That's what I get out of it. I mean, he's such a saint to me. And I'm not comparing him to Jesus, but he is a saint.
Uh-huh.
And you heard in his voice today, his steady voice. He never missed. He just was so clear today. I was so happy that you could have this call and have him live on the air. And the thing that James teaches us all is that there's no way that you should accept to lay down for the injustice system. He is standing up every step of the way. And
now, what up?
Say what?
Yeah, go ahead, Lewis. Then I have a comment too.
I couldn't hear you. What?
Well, what I was impressed with was the way James, when we were asking what he wanted to share with the audience, he was thanking people for supporting and telling people to support the radio station.
So I was impressed with where he was coming from, you know, in spite of what he's going through.
You know, go ahead, Jane. Go ahead, Lewis.
Well, and he mentioned KPOO at California's radio station there, that he supports there them. He's on their air quite a lot as well. Yes.
You know, as Martine just said, that's unusual. I mean, here, this guy, we get, we do a fund drive, as you know, Lewis, and we got guys from the Maryland House of Corrections and one up in Baltimore and Kagan Hagerstown. Inmates sent us there $5 and $10 to the station. The station had. Here go a man on death row asking folks to contribute and support the radio station. His life is at stake. He don't know what's going to happen. I mean, he's been there for 44 years. And, but that long, you're dead inside anyway. But he's an unusual person. So, folks, we need to make sure that those folks on death row can ask us to support WPFW. Why not?
That's
he said, I mean, here's a man facing imminent death, been there for 40-some years. And he's saying, support WPFW and the other stations, KPOO. To keep us on the air, because these are stations or programs that deal with life-death situations of folk whose lives are hanging in the balance. And if they can afford to send $5 and $10 and they make 12 cents, 13 cents, 40 cents an hour, that's what they make, maybe $10 to $15 a month. And they would take that $10 or $15 and send it to the station. So, folk, if you're listening, if you got any heart of compassion, dig in your pockets, make a donation to WPFW to keep us on the air at Crossroads. We'll be bringing James back and other gentlemen from Death Row.
Hey, one last thing. Those who would like to read the article that he published, we published in Covert Action Magazine, I think the first article really written about San Quentin, they can call me and I'll send it to them.
Give them a number to call, Lewis, so they can get a copy of that article.
202-841-4350. 202-841-4350.
Okay. Great. All right. And what else can they do to help you, COVID Action Magazine and James? What could our listeners do to help?
Say again. I'm sorry.
What can our listeners do to help James Anderson?
Well, to write to him. I think and as I told you, Rich, he will write you back. He writes, he always answers every letter that he ever gets.
Give that information.
Can he write, what about writing to the judge, to the governor? I mean, writing to him is okay, but what you're talking about getting that, he needs some relief. If you're hurt, you want to get the pain off. What can we do to help relieve the pain and the suffering, if we can at all?
Well, write to Governor Newsom. Maybe that one might help too.
Now, give us the address where we can write Jane.
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear you again.
She wanted the address that you gave previously on how people can write directly to James Anderson. Can you repeat that address, please?
Here you go. Yes, James P. Anderson, initial P. P.O. Box 8101, then his C number, his prison number, C11400, that's letter C, 11400, then the next line, CMC, hyphen, east, like northeast, southwest, CMC east, hyphen, FAC, Frank Albert Charles, letter A, hyphen, 2116, California Men's Colony, then San Luis Obispo, S-A-N, Luis, L-U-I-S, Obispo, O-B-I-S-P-O, California, 93409.
Wait, we need to repeat that one more time.
No, that's it. That's enough.
Okay, I'll send it out.
Oh, thank you.
We're going to send it out to folk. Again, we mentioned earlier, how imminent do you think, even though Governor Newsom in California put a moratorium on the death penalty, What is the likelihood that James will be executed or won't be executed?
Well, James told us today that he's not under a death penalty now.
Yeah.
You know, I don't have a whole lot of faith in politicians generally, but Newsom has to stand by what he says, which was to, I don't think he used the word abolish, but he ended the death penalty.
Moratorium, yes.
Yeah.
But suppose another governor can come in and reinstate the death penalty, acquit it.
Oh, yeah. And James lives in fear of that every day.
So that's him. He's still in limbo. And if one governor say we're not going to execute you, then another governor, if he loses the election, another governor can come in and say, he's going to reinstate the death penalty.
And, you know, these politicians, a lot of them have their own bloodlust. I mean, they're only too happy to win some political points by executing people. Yeah, that's how it works.
Okay. All righty. So I guess that's about it. I want to thank you for turning us into Lewis.
Oh, thank you.
Tell us a little something about your magazine, COVID Action Magazine. What is the purpose and the nature of your magazine, COVID Action Magazine?
Well, we write about the crimes of the U.S. intelligence apparatus. That is CIA, FBI, National Security Agency, and the rest. There are 17 agents, federal agencies that do intelligence. But intelligence, the intelligence business as it is today, is not about intelligence. It's gathering intelligence. It's about killing. The CIA in particular is about killing. That's what they do. That's what their job is. And they do it in with a whole lot of happiness as they do that. And I'm not exaggerating. We've done a lot of research and a lot of documentation over the years on the crimes of the CIA.
What's the CIA's involvement over in Gaza and Israel with the war going over in Gaza?
Exactly. Yes.
And I read about the director of the CIA was sitting at the table to negotiate the peace treaty to try to get a peace truce between Hamas and Israel and the U.S. What role does the CIA play in negotiating the peace treaty with Hamas and Israel?
It's somewhat over the heads of the CIA. It's also, I mean, it's the White House itself. The CIA has a very close relationship with its counterpart in Israel, which is carries out torture and repression. They've got hundreds of people in prison in Israel who are being tortured, both men and women. They even have children in prison there, and they don't treat them with nice at all.
Before we close, I read stuff you just mentioned about the treatment of kids. It's a policy in Israel. When they lock up an Israeli, a Palestinian, and they die in Israeli custody, they do not release the body to the family. They have Palestinian inmates who died 15, 20 years ago in Israel jails, and the Israeli authorities will not release the bodies 10, 15, 20 years after the person has died. And I can't understand what's the thinking or rationale for somebody pass away in your prison and the family cannot get access to the body for 10, 15, 20. They don't never return the bodies to the Palestinians who die in Israeli
That's
custody.
Right. That's so true.
Are you familiar with that?
That's absolutely the case, yes. And there are thousands. Just look at the Washington Post this morning. Thousands of Israelis in the streets demonstrating because Netanyahu didn't step up to save the hostages. And so Hamas has killed a number of the hostages. But I should also mention that Israel itself said accidentally some of the hostages were killed by their bombings. Is that any surprise?
No. Our time is up, Lewis.
Yep, thank you.
Wolf, I want to thank you for joining us and thank you for connecting us with James Anderson, who's on death row, been there for 44 years. We will be calling you and him back to stay abreast of what's happening with this case and the delays in development.
Thank you, James.
Okay, thank you. Yes. And this has been Crossroads, brought to you by WPFW 89.3 FM, your station for jazz and justice. PFW is heard around the world. I want to thank you for tuning in to my wife, Mertine, Mike Nasella, and Katia, and Mayuki. I like that name, Mayuki. So I want to thank everybody for tuning in to make this a success. And don't forget, we need your help. Dig in your pocket and give us some money. We need the chicken, honey. We need to get the bacon from the pan. Thank you. So this is Roach Brown with Crossroads. Remember, your inner voice is never wrong. Merry Christmas.
For Pacifica Radio, I'm Christina Onnested. Ukraine's President Volodymyr Zelensky says Russia's carried out one of its deadliest attacks on the country since the war began 2.5 years ago. Two Russian ballistic missiles struck an educational facility and nearby hospital in central eastern Ukraine, killing at least 41 people and wounding 180 others. The strike occurred in the city of Poltava, some 70 miles from the border with Russia. Zelensky's appealing for more weapons from allies. He said the Russian scum will undoubtedly be held accountable for this strike, and once again we urge everyone in the world who has the power to stop this terror. Air defense systems and missiles are needed in Ukraine, not in a warehouse somewhere. Every day of delay unfortunately means more lives lost, Zelensky said. A general strike in Israel over the weekend put airports, public transportation, and other key services to a standstill after six Israeli hostages were found dead in Gaza, including an American. Israel's largest trade union called for the strike, and tens of thousands took to the streets, blaming Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu for failing to reach a ceasefire and hostage swap agreement with Hamas after nearly 11 months of war. Netanyahu apologized in a national address, but doubled down his commitment to end Hamas's rule, his comments translated by Al Jazeera.
I told the families, and I will say it again tonight, I apologize and ask for your forgiveness because we couldn't bring them back alive. We were close, but we failed. Let me say this again tonight. Israel will not remain silent on this massacre. Hamas will pay the price. A very high price.
Protests continued Monday night outside his home with people in red paint holding a Dayan with their arms and feet bound like hostages. The killing of an American citizen also drew condemnation from the Biden administration. President Joe Biden said Hamas will pay over the weekend, and later, during questions from the media, when asked if he thought Netanyahu was doing enough to secure a hostage release, Biden said no. He has released a ceasefire plan that's gained no traction as Netanyahu's demanding a continued presence in Gaza, which Hamas rejects. Meanwhile, thousands took to the streets in New York to protest the war in Gaza. The United Kingdom has suspended some arms shipments to Israel, FSN's Ollie Barrett reports.
UK Foreign Secretary David Lammy announced the suspension of 30 out of around 350 arms export licenses to Israel over a risk of use in violations of international law.
These include equipment that we assess is for use in the current conflict in Gaza, such as important components which go into military aircraft, including fighter aircraft, helicopters and drones, as well as items which facilitate ground targeting.
The UK insists it continues to support Israel's right to defend itself and is not imposing a full arms embargo. In London, I'm Ollie Barrett.
In Gaza, a vaccination campaign is underway against polio after the first case was detected in a baby that has since been paralyzed. Pacifica's Romeo Magari reports.
Yalla mama, yalla mama.
Yalla. At the Al-Aqsa Martyrs Hospital and Central Gaza Strip, Mohammed Abu Maid, 3-year-old daughter Salma, has just received a polio vaccine.
I thank God for the availability of this medicine that will eventually end disease.
The 10-day long vaccination campaign, sponsored by World Health Organization, UNICEF, and UNRWA, will involve 640,000 children under the age of 10. Dr. Yusuf Abulrish, is Deputy Minister of Health in Gaza.
They are just focusing on the area which was called like the humanitarian zone alone, while our people are located in other areas which they refuse to have any permission for them to reach that point. We have a decision just that we'll go even under